is a very interesting story. It has a lot of levels. It does. I don't think it's quite as cut and dried as you do, but whatever. It's what the debate is for.
Okay.
Michael Silver originally had this story on YahooSports.com. And the story is about Jeff Ireland, who is the Miami Dolphins general manager. He is one of the Bill Parcells guys, and he is in charge of accumulating the talent for the Miami Dolphins.
Right.
Obviously, the draft is the part of that. And he, you know, interviews players and all that kind of stuff and makes the selections. And as the story goes, Michael Silver originally wrote the piece. As the story goes, when he was doing an interview with Dez Bryant, the Oklahoma State wide receiver.
And this was at their facility in Miami. Teams are allowed to bring in 30 prospects before the draft and do interviews and work them out and that kind of thing.
So last Wednesday, the night before he was selected 24th overall by the Cowboys, Dez Bryant told Michael Silver that during one of his pre-draft visits, a high-level executive of one NFL franchise had asked him if his mother was a prostitute. It turns out that the executive in question here was Jeff Ireland, the general manager of the Miami Dolphins, who has acknowledged that he did so and has apologized for it. Dez Bryant said, quote, "I got mad, really mad, but I didn't show it." Jeff Ireland said, "My job is to find out as much information as possible about a player that I'm considering drafting. Sometimes that leads to asking in-depth questions. Having said that, I talked to Dez Bryant and told him I used poor judgment in one of the questions I asked him. I certainly meant no disrespect and apologized to him. I appreciate his acceptance of that apology, and I told him I wished him well as he embarks on his NFL career." Since the story came out, there's been a lot of reaction all over the place. I have some of it here.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with yours.
Well, I'd punch him right in the face. You know, if that was a test to see what kind of reaction the player would have had, I would have failed that. I would have had to go into immediate anger management. I would have got up and I would have said, "What did you say?" And if he would have repeated the question again, I would have punched him in the face. It's exactly what I would have done, and I'd have left. I easily could say that. People say, "Oh, you say that now." No. I would have done that. I know at that point I'd have been 21, but that's what would have happened, and I would have left. And whatever happened after that would have happened after that. You know, I know he says he has to ask questions. I have some other questions here that other management people have asked players, and they do have to try and find out about background and get in depth. But there's a line everywhere, and this crossed the line, and he would have been punched in the face by me. No doubt about it. Not even a question. There would have been a question. I would have asked him to repeat that, and if he did, there would have been a beatdown.
Okay, fair enough. You've already acknowledged my second part, which is it is beyond inexcusable, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we all acknowledge that. That no human being could look at that and say that's an acceptable question to ask. The only part of it I was going to throw in is, it struck me when I read the story, he may have been asking the question because he wanted to see what the reaction
he may
would
have.
Be.
He may have, and he would have got a reaction.
It is beyond inappropriate to ask that question to anyone, I think, under any circumstances. But the only thing I was going to throw into the discussion was that might have been the reason he was asking the question.
No, I agree with you on that. I agree with you. And that would have been the reaction. Kyle Turley was an offensive lineman in the league for many years. His quote, "I don't care who you are or who you're talking to, that kind of question usually gets your blanking teeth kicked in." I mean, where do these people come from? That's just completely classless and totally unprofessional. Yeah, it would have been close to a teeth kicking in.
What makes it so, in my opinion, well, the worst part of it is that if you're the player sitting there, you know how much respect I have for you, as much joking around as I do. When you're 21 and you're trying to crazy to get into the NFL and this is your life, you might not have gotten up and punched his face. You might have wanted to, but there probably would have been something inside of you that would have said, "I can't do that right
now." Maybe.
You are in such a position of weakness when you're sitting in that room because you need this guy.
Yeah.
You need this guy, especially if you're Dez Bryant and in the particular circumstances where he missed almost all of his senior year, and you know there were all these questions, and could he fall all the way out of the first round, and look at all of the money that it cost Jimmy Clausen to fall out of the first round. I mean, every pick, every slot you fall down, it's costing you money. So that kid is in such an inferior position.
Yeah.
No, that's not the right word. Vulnerable position that, you know what, I bet you wouldn't have gotten up and punched him in the face. You would have wanted to. You would have walked out of there steaming, but you would have restrained yourself because you thought you had to.
I don't know if I would have.
And that's what makes it so awful.
I honestly don't know if I would have, but you may be right. Let me ask you another question.
Go ahead.
If you ask that to someone in a physical violent sport, wouldn't you maybe want to see a reaction?
Well, I don't. That's my point.
Would there be some? Now, the other side of that to say is, if you see a violent reaction, then you're thinking, well, if this kid's on the field and somebody starts to taunt him, is he going to lose his head? You know, I understand that, but I don't know. Someone asked me if my mom's a prostitute, and I just sit there and say, no, she's not. I mean, I don't know if that's a response.
I don't know exactly what the response was.
No, and I don't know what his was. So I don't know. But you're right, and they may have been looking for a certain response.
Looking to see what the reaction was.
All I can do is tell you what I think I would have done. And you may be right. Maybe I wouldn't have. But I don't think I would have held it all in. There would have been some reaction out of me, and I really think it would have been a punching.
As far as whether there was any league reaction, Greg Aiello, the NFL spokesman, did not elaborate, did not issue any elaborate response on the matter, writing in an email, "We are aware that Jeff called Dez Bryant and apologized." He then said, "I have nothing further to add." Now, a lot of people are asking, because people know a little bit, didn't his mother have
some legal problems? Yes,
they did. His mother, I'm reading a story here because there are some places where people are justifying the question. This is in the Boston Herald. Mike Berardino, as I found this in a Google search, writes here, "Nearly every team in the NFL had questions about Dez Bryant's mother, questions that were justified considering her troubled past. That includes an 18-month jail sentence for drug trafficking."
Right. Yeah.
So I think an appropriate way to ask a question, if you want to, mm-hmm. is to say, "We know your mother has had some legal problems
right.
in
yeah.
the past. Is there anything more than what I know about?" Mm-hmm. Anything like that.
Right.
Those are legitimate questions.
I agree with that.
Asking, "Is your mother a prostitute?" is a...
It crossed the line.
Yeah.
And again, maybe part of that, because, you know, I don't think he's asking that to everybody. But again, she had some legal troubles. So he went down that road, and maybe part of it was to see a reaction. And all I can do is sit here and tell you what I think is I may not have passed the test like Dez Bryant may have passed the test there. I may not have. Maybe I did. You said, you know, a 21-year-old is in a tough spot. We're in a position.
A very vulnerable position.
Vulnerable there. And maybe I would have tried to hold it in, but I don't know if I would have been able to. You know me, I kind of tend to fly off occasionally when things get really personal. Maybe I would have kept it in. All I can do is tell you what I think I would have done.
Michael Wilbon last night on Pardon the Interruption with Tony Kornheiser had these thoughts.
That's not an interview question. That's insulting. It's demeaning. And if Dez Bryant had gotten up and turned the desk over on this guy, that would have been inbounds too. If he had knocked his head off where I come from, that would have been fine. You know, Tony, when I talk about the NFL arrogance, this is what I'm saying. I'm not talking about just some sort of league. I'm talking about the feeling that you can say anything, do anything, and there are no consequences.
Do you think it's possible in an interview like that to gauge what kind of person they would be getting in Dez Bryant, that they wanted to see his reaction?
You don't gauge
anything.
They
wanted to see if he would turn over the tape.
That's a justification is garbage, if that's their justification.
Tony had the same thought I did, which is, I think the question is inexcusable.
Yeah.
But I think that the reason for asking the question may well have been, the motivation may have been, I want to see how he reacts when I ask this question.
Yeah, I think that was part of it. Again, she did have legal troubles. Maybe he was trying to find out just how far it went. But I do think it was part of reaction as well. Real quickly, other questions that were asked of players, I'm not saying by Jeff Ireland, but that were asked when they were making some of their trips.
This is according to Michael Silver on Yahoo.
Gerald McCoy, the D-tackle, went number 3 to Tampa Bay at the NFL scouting combine. Kind of a funny question. Do you play in a G-string or a jock strap? Myron Roll.
They asked him that?
Yeah.
I read it this morning, and I still can't get past that
question. He answered a jockstrap. Myron Roll, you know, the Rhodes Scholar safety from Florida State, who ended up going late in the, sixth round, was asked by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers what it felt like to desert your team. Because, again, he missed the first half of the Maryland game, I think it was, for the Rhodes Scholar interview.
Right.
So they asked him what it was like to desert his team. Heisman Trophy runner-up Toby Gerhardt said one team asked him if being a white running back made him feel entitled. So that was another question that was out there as well. So, yes, some are to dig, some are to possibly provoke to see what kind of an answer you're going to get. And, you know, there's a lot of strong reaction to this. I agree with you. That if the mother did have troubles, there are ways to ask questions. to come out and ask if your mother is a prostitute is not the way to go about it.
You can tweet us. We're on Twitter, twitter.com/Greeny and Golic. Here are some of the tweets. Did they cross the line? We threw out the question, did the Dolphins cross the line with that question? Did they cross the line? The line was nowhere in sight for what the Dolphins executive did. Surprised Bryant kept it together. Here's another. Yes, it's one thing to ask if your family has had legal troubles, another to ask if your mom is a prostitute. Third, that question has no relevance to what the player will do for the team. He's a football player. And then finally, someone writes, even if they were trying to see if he would cross the line, they could have asked a different question. Let's go back to that third one for a minute. That question has no relevance to what the player will do for the team who's a football player. That's right. Lost in all of this is, not only is it a question that is that could easily inflame a person, may just make you mad and offended, but also a very legitimate response could be, what does that have to do with anything?
Well, if he flew off the handle like I say I would have, and 99% of the emailers say they would that have made you look at the player differently? We had an emailer say, you know what? I wish they'd have asked this of D'Angelo Hall in Atlanta. You know, maybe he would have gone off and punched somebody and they would have seen his anger problems and we wouldn't have had 5,000 yards in personal foul penalties and gave him all that money. So the point being there is, do you find out something about the reaction that says, well, maybe this guy will fly off the handle on the field? So are you finding something out on the field?
Mark, on our email, Mike@ESPNRadio.com, writes, every cornerback in the league is now going to get on Dez Bryant about his mother. Ireland created a trash-talking firestorm. That's horrible. If it was phrased like that, he should face some sanction by the NFL. Our NFL insider, Adam Schefter, flying by. He joins us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. What do you think, Schefty?
Good morning, gentlemen. I can't help but bring a little levity to the situation. And yes, it was in poor taste what Jeff Ireland did. There's no question about it. And I think the league should act accordingly. But I remember teams are always asking prospects all sorts of unusual questions. I remember back in the early to mid-1990s, Kevin Hardy, the Illinois linebacker who was projected as a top pick in the draft, was coming out. And I asked him what was the weirdest question that somebody asked him at the combine. And the Giants had this perpetually long questionnaire every year where they asked a lot of odd questions. And he said the oddest question that he was asked was, do you like tall women? And I said, and what'd you answer? And he said, I just crossed out the team where I like all women.
That's very well done. Thank you, Adam Schefter. Our buddy Schefter on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. That's good stuff. I actually, if you want to continue with the levity, I had a job interview once. WGN Radio in Chicago, legendary radio station when I was first starting out. And I got brought in for an interview for a sports job. And I was in this executive's office. You never went through any of this, right? You're a football player.
No.
I'm in this executive's office. And I'd never, this is the only time I ever was asked anything like this. He's got a painting on his wall in the office, right? It's like a maze, like a painting of like a labyrinth kind of a thing.
Okay.
And he points it and he says, tell me a story. Just like that.
He points
at the painting and says, tell me a story. And I said, what? And he said, he points, tell me a story. And I said, about the painting? He said, tell me a story. Just pointing.
Okay. So what'd you do?
I panicked and I said, once upon a time there was a guy who got stuck in a labyrinth and he never found his way out and he died. And I didn't get the job.
Okay, I thought you were going to go to a Mopac story.
No, that was the story. That's exactly the truth.
Wow, tell you a story. That was a terrible interview story.
Well, I like the other interview story better. Now, if we wanted to go with a little levity here, as far as that, we could have gone with this.
Hey, leave the mothers out of this, all right?
That would have been appropriate.
Yes.
Or even better, we could have said this was a dramatic dramatization of the situation.
Your mother was a hamster, and your father smelt of elderberries.
Is there someone else up there we could talk to?
No. Now go away or I shall taunt you a second time.
So we could have gone there, but we did not because it would not have been appropriate.
Wow. This is really, really, really interesting. Again, what the reason for was the questioning. Was it because the mom had legal troubles or was he trying to get a reaction?
Clearly, if his mother didn't have any legal trouble at all, then that question would have been so far out of bounds that he should be fired. I mean, certainly sanctioned.
Do you think the league should do something?
No.
Do you think you get involved at all?
No, I don't. I think this is a team issue. If the team has a problem with it, if your employer has a problem with it, you know, personal conduct, my inclination would be to say no. Do you think the league should do something?
I I believe it would be a team thing more, but a lot of people are emailing in. You know, Roger Goodell's getting involved in players and policy and the way they're acting and embarrassing things. Is this not an embarrassing situation for the league when one of its management people is asking a player if his mom's a prostitute?
I'll say this. If the mother never had any legal problems of any kind, then I would say it rose to a greater offense. I'm not justifying the question in any way, but it does change the equation, just if only slightly. It's a completely inappropriate question to ask under any circumstances.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
We're very pleased to have been able to grab Tim Legler, our NBA insider extraordinaire, who joins us in studio. Let's start with the Lakers reestablishing themselves last night. My favorite number that came out of last night's playoff action is Game 4, Oklahoma City wins by 21. Halftime last night, the Lakers are up by 21. Kobe gets everybody involved. They played great. What did you see in that game?
I saw the Lakers for the first time in this series come out and have a commitment to just attacking them and pounding them inside. I mean, Pau Gasol and Andrew Bynum last night looked like they were 8 feet tall compared to the front line of the Oklahoma City Thunder. They haven't played that way to this point in the series. The Lakers drift in and out of their commitment to establish that. And when they're really good, we say it all the time. What are we always talking about after a great performance by the Lakers? How good the big guys were. How much they dominated the paint. That's why they won a championship a year ago. That's why they failed against the Celtics 2 years ago in the finals. They got dominated in the paint. Last night, it was very simple formula. Andrew Bynum, Pau Gasol, post-up directs, offensive rebounds, interior passing between the two of them. To me, that was the difference in the game. Kobe Bryant still didn't have a great game offensively, but he was orchestrating. He was very, very into it defensively, and they made a big adjustment with him guarding Russell Westbrook, which really kind of changed things around.
And I loved the way he broke the game down. This was Kobe after the game. If a superstar talks like this after every playoff game, you're going to win every game.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you what. If I didn't have Powell, Andrew, and the crew that I have, I score 45, 50 points, and everybody say, damn, he shoots too much. I got a great crew. I don't need to do that. I can pick my poison. So when I get in the paint, teams have to make choices. You know, if they play me, I'll kick it to my guys, and they'll score, and I'll have big nights. If they don't, then I'll have a big night. It's as simple as that.
Simple as that. I thought that's a great explanation.
There's no other better way to sum it up. And Kobe last night, I thought he was attacking. He was very aggressive getting into the paint with his dribble, but he wasn't looking to get into his shot necessarily. He was trying to find guys in the pockets around the rim when Oklahoma City came to help. I thought the Thunder didn't respond well to the early surge that they got. They should have been expecting that, and they didn't look like they were. I don't know if they were overconfident based on what happened in Game 4, and they thought, well, we're going to go toe-to-toe. This game's going down to the wire. Lakers hit them in the gut in the first 5 minutes of the game, and the Thunder really were back on their heels the entire night. Now they've got to figure out a way to go back home and muster up what they had in Games 3 and 4.
Lakers outscore the Thunder 58-26 in the paint, as you had mentioned before. So is the funk that occasionally the Lakers look like they're in, is that more on them or the Thunder get credit for it?
You've got to give the Thunder credit, but look, the Lakers are a team we've been watching now for 3 years with this group together, and you always look at them and say, you know, what happened to the Lakers in a particular game? Why were they so complacent? Why did they come out and they'll spend an entire quarter sometimes shooting jump shots and shooting a game when they'll shoot 24, 25 three-pointers? You just don't get it. Why they don't play this way all the time. Now, part of it is individually, you've got to look at guys like Gasol and Bynum. Why do they not come out and establish deep position? You know, last night, Andrew Bynum looked like a man possessed. How badly he wanted the basketball down low. He was throwing his back into guys, pinning them under the rim, and demanding the ball. A lot like, you know, Dwight Howard does when he's playing well. That's how Bynum looked last night. Gasol, you know, he's a much better offensive player, but still inconsistent with his determination to get guys in the paint. He'll turn into a 15-foot jump shooter for an entire half sometimes. So it really falls on those guys individually. When the Lakers play the way they did last night, there's not a team in this league that can beat them, not even Cleveland.
We will get Legler's thoughts on Dwight Howard and his comments coming up shortly. We'll do the Eastern Conference in a few minutes with the LeBron injury, Dwayne Wade's future, the Bulls coaching situation. But let's stay in the West, where Dallas needed to come out last night and do the same thing the Lakers did, punch the opponent in the gut, and they did. Run out to the early lead against San Antonio and just really put it on cruise control. They get a really big night. So who has the edge now as you go to a Game 6 where the Spurs still have home court advantage, but Dallas doesn't just win Game 5, they win it very convincingly?
You got to give it to the Spurs, and you know, I don't think this is even a case where if the Spurs lose Game 6, you say there's no way they're winning the game in Dallas. Come on, it's the Spurs. They could come up with a win when they have to get a win. So right now, they're still in the driver's seat. Dallas came out last night. The interesting thing to me, I don't think people understand enough how tough it is for a guy that was like your go-to kind of primary scoring option to come to a team, I'm talking about Caron Butler, and be a guy that spends a lot of time posting up, are cutting on the weak side of the floor and not being the guy that they run the offense through. And that's what Caron Butler's been in since he got there. They haven't really utilized him for the things that he does well. Last night he came out and they went to him. And I think Rick Carlisle and Caron Butler must have had that conversation on the off day where he basically said, look, you know, I could do more. I know, but I've got to be a guy that, you know, you come to first. And they did that last night. Dirk Nowitzki's 14 shots. You got to go back, I think, to February to see a game which he took 14 shots or less. Caron Butler was the guy last night that they were running the offense through, and it took a lot of pressure off Nowitzki and Kidd and Sean Marion, guys that had been struggling a little bit, and he came up with a huge performance, 35 points, 11 boards. This is what you brought him in for. Now the question is going to be, can they sustain this? Can they go in and get that win in San Antonio and force that seventh game at home?
Many thought that during the regular season, Denver was a team that would push the Lakers the most. Now they're down 3-1 to Utah and could be out of the playoffs tonight. How much has George Karl's situation affected this team?
It's been huge. I sat there courtside. I called game three in Utah. I can't think of the last time I saw a team that fractured more easily or handled adversity worse than the Denver Nuggets right now. And that has to be a reflection of your head coach not being there, because I looked at them. Utah Jazz came out and Denver jumped them early. They were up 10. Things are going well. As soon as Utah's bench came in the game and they made a run and they took the lead, you know, early mid-second quarter, the body language in the Denver Nuggets, when the ball would go through the net, you'd have 3-4 guys turn and literally their shoulders would slump. They'd be walking up the court offensively, getting into their next possession as if the game was over. They showed the bench at one point, middle of the third quarter. It's like a 10-12 point game. It looked like a closeout game. It was 1-1. Middle of the third quarter, and it looked like they didn't want to be there. They weren't having fun. Now there's a little bit of finger pointing going on, and all of those things are a reflection of your head coach not being there. And this is not to put any blame on Adrian Dantley. It's a tough situation to be in, but when your head coach isn't there, it's just not the same feel from a player standpoint. I've never been in this exact situation, but I've been in situations with interim coaches in the NBA, and it's got to feel a lot like that to these guys. And you're in the playoffs right now where you really need that guy more than ever, and him not being there has been a huge impact, particularly guys like Carmelo and Chauncey, who really trust him so much. He's got a great relationship with both of them. To not be there, they're having a hard time, both of those guys, keeping everybody else in check and keeping them on the same page. And you can see this, to me, like I said, is a fractured team. I think that's the best word for it.
Legler stays with us. We'll go to the Eastern Conference next. How worried should we be about LeBron's elbow? How worried should we be about Dwight Howard's fouling? And what are the Bulls going to do about a new coach as they try and grit Dwayne Wade or LeBron James or somebody to come to Chicago? All those answers with Legler next. Mike and Mike in the morning.
ESPN Radio.
LeBron James finished up the Cavs-Bulls series last night by shooting a free throw left-handed.
Yeah.
Said his right elbow was bothering him, but said the city of Cleveland need not panic.
Cleveland fans have nothing to be worried about. I'm healthy. I'm ready, and we look forward to the second round. They don't have no reason to panic.
Where they will play Boston.
Yes, and just let me reiterate, it was after he made the previous free throw to give them a four-point lead in that game before he shot it with his left hand, which I found somewhat interesting.
Tim Legler, what do you think here? Is there cause for concern with LeBron?
Well, there definitely is. I think the first thing that popped through my head when I watched it last night live was he was intentionally trying to miss it, obviously, because he had just swished the first one with his right hand. I don't know how much pain could have taken place between that free throw and his attempt to shoot the second one. But then I realized, you know, why would he do that? Four-point game, doesn't make any sense. Really, there's no advantage in missing the free throw right there. There's definitely concern. I didn't like the way he was holding his arm after that defensively for that last possession. He almost had it like he was in a sling. He was holding it against his body so tight. The fact that no one really knew the extent of how much this was bothering him until last night, I think, is a little bit of a concern. And the fact that they don't know what it is and really what he's even feeling. Is it inflammation? Is it pain? Is it stiffness? What exactly is he feeling there? I just know that if he's not 100%, or if he's not typical LeBron in this next series, they're not going to beat Boston. So, obviously, from a Cavs point of view, you're definitely concerned about this.
So the Cavs and Celtics go on last night, and there are a lot of questions about the futures of the two teams that were eliminated by them last night. Let's start with the Bulls, where it appears a foregone conclusion. Vinny Del Negro is going to be out as the coach. You were his teammate in the NBA.
No, I was not his teammate. We came out the same year. I've known Vinny forever.
Okay, so either way, he's going to be out. Some people think he actually did a good job this year. Regardless, the writing is on the wall. He's going to be out. It seems to me the Bulls, because they have aspirations of bringing in a Big Max guy, they're going to go after LeBron, they're going to go after Dwayne Wade, maybe Chris Bosh, Joe Johnson, whatever it is, that they're going to want to bring in a coach who would be an aid to them in that recruitment process. So as you look at the guys who are out there who are available right now as coaches, Who are the guys who you think some of these superstars might be excited about the idea of playing for?
Well, to me, the guy that jumps out at the top of the list would be Avery Johnson. And I don't know, Avery, I know there might be a situation maybe even that opens up in New Orleans. I know it would be very attractive to Avery being from New Orleans. So he's going to have some opportunities out there. There might be as many as 10 head coaching vacancies between now and the start of next season. So there's going to be all kinds of jobs. I think Avery's the kind of guy that players really respect. They respect what he did in Dallas. They respect the fact that he's a former player. He commands a presence in the huddle. He's not afraid to tell guys what they need to do. Because some coaches, I think, defer too much to superstar players. Avery's not in that boat either. It's clear to me that roster is going to look completely different. If they can hold on to Rose and Noah, and you bring in one of the guys you just mentioned, immediately you take this team. I don't care who else they have, what their supporting cast looks like. With those three guys, anyone from the list you just gave me, that team immediately contends in the Eastern Conference next year.
Well, how much does the players that Greeny mentioned keep an eye on what happens in Chicago and who they hire?
Oh, there's no doubt. You have to. And that's why these teams are on a clock. I mean, they're on a clock immediately. You've got to make sure that there's stability there with who your head coach is. It also affects, what's going to happen with the draft as well. But free agency is just as important in terms of a player coming in. Who's your head coach? You have to know that kind of thing. It's also interesting to me the domino effect that these guys are going to have for each other. So there's going to be a lot of communication between the guys on that list. And trying to figure out, what do you think? You want to come here and play with me? They have to work all those things out. You can't just be the first guy to sign blindly, not knowing what the next four or five guys are going to do. There's going to be a lot of text messaging and Twittering and Facebooking and maybe even a conversation over the phone, which I know is outdated.
Yeah, that's so 1998.
That's so antiquated, I understand. but there might be a couple of those to take place as well.
Let's get to Wade then, who afterwards said all the things we knew he'd say. He said, look, they know how I feel here. They know I want to be here, but I'm not going out in the first round again. He needs to be convinced that he can win a title in Miami. And you were talking on TV last night about all the other factors that go into a decision. He's dug in the community. He loves it in Miami and everything else. What is your sense of what the Heat has to do to convince Dwayne Wade he's in the right place?
So Pat Riley has already gone out on record, to his credit, two, three weeks ago and said, we not only can afford one guy at max dollar, we can afford another guy that's maybe on that next shelf below. So now you're talking about Wade with another superstar and then a legitimate, all-star caliber player. That's what Pat Riley's saying they're going to do. And, does Dwayne Wade need specific names? Probably. He's going to have that conversation with the front office. Like, who are you targeting? It doesn't mean they're going to get them, because so many things have to fall in place, and it's going to take time to sort this out, to see, who they can end up getting. But they've got to show him. And I think the press conference he had last night after the game, to me, if I'm a Heat fan, I'm encouraged by what he said. I really am. Because he said, look, where my heart is. I want to be here. He was sending a message to the Heat front office that, look, you need to surround me with some guys, because I'm sitting in his locker right now, my feet in a couple of buckets of ice, and I'm looking around saying, my God, how far I really am from getting back to the finals. And that really, I think, is going to sink in on him.
Quickly, which of the guys who we know are available is the best fit with Wade? Who's the next, the one guy who would be the perfect complement to him?
Well, I think you've got to have a post player. It's got to be Bosch. I mean, I think Bosch is the guy, because you have to get more production up front than what you're getting. Look what Jermaine O'Neal did in this series. Look what Michael Beasley did in a game last night. You're getting ready to get closed out. He goes for 2 points and three turnovers as a starter, 13 minutes. He's your second leading scorer. They need help in the paint, and Chris Bosh, to me, would be the biggest solution. Obviously, you'd say LeBron James, but I don't think LeBron James and Dwayne Wade are ever going to play together.
I agree.
Joe Johnson is a guy also that he's a guard. He plays on the wing. He needs the basketball. Bosh is a different player. He's a guy that can go get stuff on his own in the paint. That's something the Heat don't have.
Magic sweep the Bobcats. Dwight Howard fouls out of two games and foul trouble in the other two games as well. He blogs that he can't believe how much the whistle is going against him. He said Patrick Ewing said he's never seen this as either. He's assistant coach down there. What's your take on what's going on with Dwight Howard, and what does he need to take from this?
I personally felt that he got the short end of the stick on a lot of calls. I really did. I mean, when you look at the guy that's a defensive player of the year, you're supposed to get a little bit more respect than that. You really are. You're supposed to be able to block, go after a ball up top, and maybe have some body contact down below and not get all those calls. He had some cheap ones. Now, he had some dumb fouls as well. Some of his offensive fouls in particular, trying to establish position where he's just throwing his body around. But defensively, I thought some of the plays where he met guys at the rim, that you got to give him a little bit more leeway with the reputation that he has and what he's out there to do. Part of the problem for him was when you get a couple fouls early, now you say you got two in the first quarter, you come back into the game, let's say 6-7 minutes to go in the half, you're tentative. And when you're tentative, you're a half step late getting there. And now it compounds the problem. You can't be as aggressive and try to meet guys outside the rim, you know, across the lane. You're now back on your heels meeting them like under the basket because you don't want to pick up a cheap foul. And now officials tend to give big guys another foul when they're back on their heels and kind of backpedaling. I thought Dwight Howard got caught up in that as well. And basically the entire story of the series for him was foul trouble. He had no impact really on the series at all other than a couple of, you know, pretty good rebounding games. Dwight Howard's going to have to be much, much better than that if the Orlando Magic want to contend with teams like Cleveland or Boston.
Mike and Mike and Legler, who's one of our favorites, before he runs over to do SportsCenter, quickly, Legs, I'm going to give you a trivia question.
All right.
In NBA history, only three players have finished a season shooting better than 50% from the field, better than 50% from the three-point line, and 80% from the line. Can you name those three players?
I know I'm on the list, so I really don't care who else is.
That is correct. Tim Legler is one of the three players ever to finish a season shooting better than 50% from the floor, 50% from three, and 80% from the line with a minimum of 100 three-point attempts. You are on the list. You know who the other two are? I want to guess.
I do not. Is Reggie Miller on the list?
He is not.
No, I don't know.
You got that up on him. Steve Kerr, Detlef Schrempf.
Detlef Schrempf.
Detlef Schrempf.
There you go.
Steve Kerr.
Share the list with him.
And Tim Legler.
Nicely done.
That's not a bad list.
Bob Picosi with outstanding trivia. Great. Thanks a million for coming.
Thanks, guys.
Timmy Legler throughout the playoffs. Outstanding.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
Steven Strasburg had a big performance in the minors yesterday. He is with a bullet on his way to the major leagues, and Buster Olney is flying by with the very latest. Buster, go.
Well, it doesn't look like he probably is going to have another start in Double A. Last night he's pitching against Double A Reading, and he was absolutely unhittable. Literally. Five innings, no hits, no walks, six strikeouts. So now in Double A, he's pitched 17 to third innings, seven hits, three walks, 23 strikeouts, one earned run. So there really doesn't seem to be another reason to keep him in Double A. He'll move up to Triple A at some point very soon, and he will be in the big league sometime in late May or early June. And it's interesting, the one thing that they really wanted to work with him on in the minor leagues was actually slowing down his delivery. He's so quick to home plate that they felt like he was losing velocity on his fastball, losing angle on his fastball, so they slowed him down a little bit. One problem, no one gets on base against him, so he hasn't been able to work with that much.
Last thing, Buster, when he does come up to the majors, what will be the Strasburg rules?
He basically will be pitching a lot like Jabba Chamberlain in terms of he's only going to have about 150 innings this year. So he'll have about 90, 95 innings left to pitch in the big leagues this season. They're going to be conservative with him, as they should be.
The great Buster Olney on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline flying by with the very latest on the young phenom who seems to be living up to the hype in Steven Strasburg.